This edition of Culture with Robert Bound was first broadcast on the 14th of July 2014 on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to the 144th edition of Culture with me, Robert Bound. Today we're up with the lark, wiping the sleepy dust out of our eyes and listening to the whistle of the kettle. We're all about breakfast shows today. We'll meet the man behind the radio station that only plays breakfast shows, a sort of global digest of early morning shenanigans.
Every listener in a different time zone gets a totally different schedule. So for us, we have a European morning, an African morning, and then we have an American afternoon, and then a sort of Australian evening.
We'll speak to our old mate Peter White from Broadcast Magazine to ask if breakfast shows are all about clever formats or charming presenters.
It's all about who you've got, and that's right across the world. It generally tends to be, here's a bit of news, here's a bit of lifestyle, here's a bit of chat with some celebrities, and then go off to work.
We'll find out what it's like to be the person that has to get everyone up and out the door in the morning when we speak to CBC's Matt Galloway.
If somebody's lying in bed and the first thing that they hear at a quarter to six is your voice, you can set them off on the right path or the wrong path.
Plus, we'll visit radio stations and TV sets in New York, Vienna and Socotra. That's on the Gulf of Aden. And there's a Midori House session from the wonderful Penguin Cafe. So kick back the covers, open the blinds, pour yourself some fresh orange juice, and let's take the morning leisurely here on Culture on Monocle 24. First up, we're easing you in with this week's Midori House session. Penguin Cafe are one of those groups you somehow just know, even if you don't know why you know them. Formed by Arthur Jeffs as both a tribute to and continuation of the work of his late father Simon Jeffs and his Penguin Cafe Orchestra, they play music that touches the soul with its stark and simple beauty, both dreamlike and emotionally moving. Combining the repetition of contemporary classical music with the warmth and heart of traditional folk instrumentation, their music is beloved by listeners and particularly filmmakers and ad men looking to cast a catchy earworm into their work. As part of their tour to promote a new album, The Red Book, they drop by Midori House en masse for a session, and from that, this is Music for a Found Harmonium.
Thank you.
That was Penguin Cafe providing you with a wake-up call with music for a found harmonium. More of that later here on Culture. But now, breakfast. Ah, the morning. Ideally, it would always sound like this. But sometimes, they sound a little bit more like this. Whether you're a get-up-and-goer or king of the snooze button, we all have our morning routines. Do you shower first? Brush your teeth, maybe. Perhaps you're one of those we love to hate. Up and out at 6:30 to do 10 laps at the local park. Waking up is that time of day where the world is your oyster, and getting out the wrong side could spoil everything. So what about those people who aim to make the process that little bit easier? Though many of us may be turning to our mobile devices for an instant morning news hit, the breakfast show, whether it be on TV or radio, still plays a vital role in our daily media consumption. According to the UK's official radio audience measuring body, Radar, a whopping 90% of the population still twiddle their dials to tune in each week. Who says it's a dying medium? And so that's where we'll begin. Think about the radio show you wake up to. Perhaps it provides information on your morning commute. Maybe it churns out pop hits. There might be room for political discussion and listener phone-ins, those competitions to win a sparkly new car. From chirpy, highly energised presenters to those who like to take things a little easier, there really is, and please excuse the cliché, something for everyone. But let's make this global, for it's always morning somewhere in the world, which means there's always a breakfast show happening too. My first guest may well hold the title for most breakfast shows listened to ever. They are Seb Amina and Daniel Jones, and they've set up Global Breakfast Radio, an online station that chases the sunrise around the globe. It streams around 15 minutes of live radio from wherever in the world. It's breakfast time, and it covers over 250 stations in more than 120 countries and broadcasts in over 50 languages. First, we'll hear what it sounds like, and then hear from Seb and Daniel themselves.
You've been listening to the 11:45 edition of The Big Stories on Observer Radio, News Talk 911.
Well, that's a good-looking horse Chester's riding, man.
He's thinking of buying it, Doc.
Buying it? Buying it. With what?
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. Good morning, I'm David Green.
And I'm Renee Montaigne.
Whatever their Lord intended guidance for them.
Suggest as long as you're talking about swim lessons, maybe you could get the Red Cross or somebody down here and bring people in to get lifeguard lessons.
Bueno, estamos en las 7-8 minutos.
Chip Guard from the National Weather Service expects the following damage as a result of the storm. The possibility of tin roofing becoming airborne now. Setting sun, counting me forever ready until our Lord shall come.
The whole thing started with a conversation that Daniel and I had when I was writing my book, The Breakfast Bible, which is all about breakfast, the meal of breakfast. Mm. And it just occurred to me, this idea that it's always breakfast time somewhere in the world. And I was chatting to Daniel, and he's a sort of sound and systems artist that does a lot of stuff with technology and audio and radio and that kind of thing. And we had this notion that you could actually, in theory, listen to breakfast radio all day, every day. And there's a kind of lovely idea surrounding that. And the sunrise, I think, the idea that the sun is always rising somewhere. And there's something kind of poetic about that image.
Before we started speaking, the last time I logged on to Global Breakfast Radio, your website, your station, I was halfway between WCPN 90.3 in Cleveland, Ohio, and a radio station, I think it's WMMT in Winesburg, Kentucky. Do you curate what you put on there, or is it, I mean, it's not a random stream, obviously you take a kind of straw poll of the radio stations around the world and decide in what order to put them, I guess.
We do curate it, yeah. We've spent a long time, it's been almost 18 months now that we've been kind of travelling the world through this medium of internet radio, seeking out stations from every single different time zone. So we'll be looking from country to country trying to pick out the highlights of breakfast radio at that time, which means that we've really been having to listen to the radio around the clock as well. And it's been a fantastic kind of voyage for us, particularly trying to pick out radio stations that are broadcasting from these tiny islands in the middle of the Atlantic and the Pacific, places like French Polynesia and Papua New Guinea and Guam. And these have been some of the real highlights for us, I think, like finding local radio stations intended for local people that you can still pick up wherever you are through this medium of radio.
So talk us through a couple of the ones that our listeners, as international as they are, might not have heard. You mentioned French Polynesia, various different places. We were talking about small radio stations in the Bahamas and things. But tell us some of your favourite ones. When it's, say it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon here in the UK and you guys are like, right, we've got to get on to somewhere in the flyover states of the United States, for example.
Well, at 4 p.m. in the afternoon, I think it's around breakfast time in Alaska, I would guess, on the West Coast. And there's a wonderful radio station broadcasting from a small promontory, I think, is that right? Called Unalaska in Alaska that plays a lot of weird and wonderful North American music. And there's a whole lot of college rock stations as well on the West Coast, yeah, that we've been incorporating, as well as the more kind of esoteric, far outside of things. There's a great station called SF Sound broadcasting from San Francisco that's kind of an art radio station. And really one of the things that we're trying to do is pick out stuff that is quite characteristic of those places, as well as trying to create a kind of global portrait, really, of all of the esoteric and all of the kind of mundane and everyday that exists across the world.
I mean, it's not always cheery. It's not always, you know, hey, pop listeners, you know, have a great day.
Hey, kids, thanks for tuning in.
Exactly, all that stuff. And sometimes it's surprising how opposed to maybe the British idea of breakfast radio these stations can get. I mean, SF Sound, the art stations, they make no concession to breakfast at all. It'd be like clicks and shuffles and discordant saxes, all that kind of thing. There's no concept of breakfast there or morning. It doesn't matter. I think there's an Antiguan station where the morning slot is for reading out the obituaries from the community. So again, a very different idea of breakfast radio.
We regret to announce the death of Leonard Rouse, Carmen Hendrickson, Florence Jarvis, Ella Nibbs, and Claudia Garnett.
There is that strange idea we have, that idea maybe that breakfast radio has to be all cheapy chirpy and kind of happy chappy kind of stuff. When you're curating and you're putting together your list of stations through the day, that you have to inject a bit of levity here and you can have some sort of serious college rocks action there. Do you want it to, what sort of rhythm and ebb and flow do you want the sound of your station to have?
I think the levity kind of comes naturally. I mean, as we said, there is a seam running through that. And in part of the process of listening, we're trying to keep our own listening eclectic as we kind of navigate through all of these different countries. And one of the things to be said about the station as well is that though we've curated the kind of palette of stations that it draws from, the actual selection of those is done by an automated system that will kind of move every 15 minutes now from station to station. And so the rhythm is a lot more chance-based than anything that we could select. But you kind of, you know, you pick up these patterns running through it as you run through Africa, across the Pacific and so forth. You kind of get these natural geographical rhythms more than anything that we've intentionally programmed into it.
Every listener in a different time zone gets a totally different schedule in the day. So for us, we have a European morning, an African morning, and then we have an American afternoon, and then a sort of Pacific Australian evening when we're listening to that. But if you're in Japan, you get a whole different schedule. Yeah. You get an Asian morning and a European afternoon.
That was Seb Amina and Daniel Jones, founders of Global Breakfast Radio. And if you fancy tuning in, just head to globalbreakfastradio.com. For those just joining us, you're listening to Culture with me, Robert Bound, and today we're talking about breakfast shows. We've just heard from the people who searched high and low for their favourites and put them all in one place, but throughout the show we'll dig a little deeper and visit stations across the globe to see how they wake up their nations. First up, we head to the archipelago of Socotra, located in the Gulf of Aden. Socotra has been called the most alien-looking place on Earth, and its exotic and otherworldly landscape has made the place a dream destination for adventurous tourists. But in recent years, the main island, also called Socotra, has slowly taken steps towards modernisation. Monocle's Mike Dodge Weisskopf reports on a new sound that greets the island's population every morning.
It's early morning in Hadibo, the largest town on the Yemeni archipelago of Socotra. The day's first call to prayer has already sounded, and radio producer Abdullah Al-Anami is opening the gates of Socotra's brand new radio station, the local radio of Socotra Archipelago, to begin the morning's broadcast. Al-Anami was sent by the Yemeni government from his home in the capital city of Sana'a to help set up the radio station in December of 2012. He explains that the idea of the radio station came about as part of Yemen's initiative to provide local news and information for each of its major metropolitan areas.
Actually, the strategy of Yemeni government to build a radio station in each state. But Socotra got a radio station because it's quite far in the Indian Ocean, so the government of Yemen decides to give Socotra a radio station.
About 50,000 people call Socotra home, of whom 9,000 can be found in Hadibo. But until very recently, Socotra had no media outlets of any kind. No newspapers, television, or radio stations. Al-Anami explains that the building of the radio station meets several needs.
He says first to support the government here and to connect also Socotra with the Yemeni news, so Yemen can get the news of Socotra. And then moreover, to promote the tourism part. And also, they are working on involving a more culture traditions program.
That is the ultimate goal. But for the time being, listeners who tune into the local radio of Socotra Archipelago are treated mostly to content coming from the mainland. Unlike other stations in Yemen's national radio network, Socotra's station is only on the air for 5 hours in the morning, which makes just about all of their programming a perpetual breakfast show. This is because generator power on the island is highly rationed, and the station can only maintain airtime when their section of Hadibo itself is on the grid. The first 2 hours of each day are devoted to readings from the Quran, a customary program in an Islamic-majority country such as Yemen. The next few hours are a mixture of popular Arabic music, such as the legendary Egyptian singer Umm Kulthum, and news bulletins from Yemen's national radio network. But, Al-Anami says, new programs are already underway in the Socotri language, which engage directly with the local audience. Most surprising of these is a program addressing what Al-Anami describes as, quote, women's rights.
It's something considering the woman in healthcare and in family planning, like example, how many kids that she should get and her beauty also in her house, and then also how she can cook better, you know.
The station will also have a morning call-in show, where Socotri can phone into the station to send congratulations, air a civic grievance, or speak out on a personal issue. Al-Anami also hopes that the radio station will become a venue for local Socotri poets and musicians to showcase their work to Yemen, and ultimately, the world. For Monocle, in Hadibo, Socotra, I'm Mike Dodge Weisskopf.
Thank you, Mike. We'll hear more from broadcasters in Toronto, Vienna and New York later on in the show. After break, Broadcast Magazine's Peter White drops by to switch the dial to TV.
A nation defining its identity or architectural vandalism, Monocle Films heads to the capital of the Republic of Macedonia to investigate a controversial building project.
Museums, theatres and government ministries have sprouted up along the riverbank, and with their neoclassical and Baroque stylings, the Skopje 2014 building boom harks back to the past. It's nothing less than eyebrow-raising, and for some, it's positively stomach-churning.
Skopje 2014, an architectural facelift, now playing in the Films menu on Monocle.com.
Welcome back to Culture with me, Robert Bounds. How important is the breakfast show for setting a station's agenda and locking in its personality? And what are the big differences around the world and those between radio and TV? Is it a game of clever formats or irresistibly perky presenters? I invited broadcast Peter White in to give us some context to go with our cornflakes.
Breakfast TV is a bit of a strange beast because, and this has changed over the last few years, you've seen that a few of the channels have gotten out of it, and such as Channel 4 just plays US imports, you know, your likes of Fraser doing those spots. Sky News has a sort of Eamon Holmes sighing against the newspapers, just, oh, what's going on today?
Yeah.
But other than that, it's
Do you think that's in the auto cue?
I think it probably is.
Eamon colon sigh in sort of square brackets.
Probably is. Yeah. That's probably why.
Stage direction.
That's why they pay him.
Yeah, exactly. He's the king of the sighs.
The big sighs.
Yeah. Are we looking at format, sort of tightly written shows with kind of multiple sort of strands within them, or are we really just looking at the chemistry between two or three presenters on a couch?
It's the person who's hosting it. I think that's it. You know, right across the world, in the US a particular example, that, you know, they're sort of breakfast hosts or some of their best known stars, you know, throughout the channel. So yeah, it's all about who you've got, and that's right across the world. It generally tends to be, here's a bit of news, here's a bit of lifestyle, here's a bit of chat with some celebrities, and then go off to work. And that tends to be the sort of normal, you know, whether that's in Argentina or whether that's in, you know, Israel or Australia, it tends to be the same. Although breakfast television tends to be a Western phenomenon in terms of more people caring about it. We in the UK and the US and some of the Western English-speaking markets seem to put a bit more on it than other territories.
Let's talk about the US then. This is obviously a massive market. It's, I mean, as you say, in the UK, it's delineated really between the BBC, BBC One and ITV. What about in the US? It seems to be a much more sort of multifarious exercise. Lots more faces popping off your TV screen, inevitably, I suppose.
Yeah, a little bit. ABC and NBC are the sort of big ones. Good Morning America is the big show.
Good morning, America, and breaking right now for our viewers in the West. A large earthquake felt across Los Angeles, the 4.4, centered in LA's west side, but millions are feeling
it. It's basically a show with a desk, and yeah, they have a bunch of people talking on it. But as we said, some of the people who are sitting around those tables are some of the sort of biggest faces of the networks.
In terms of the percentages, because we look at the Jay Leno show, we look at the various talk show, late night talk shows in the US, I'm always surprised at how low the viewing figures are. Clearly, they're probably AB1 viewers in terms of an advertising audience. But in the breakfast shows, it seems like they have basically a bigger following. Can we say that it's more natural for Americans to press the remote on their TV rather than on their radio in the mornings?
The US is a much more of a regional radio system, you know, rather than a national system, whereas the broadcasters are national. So there is a bit of difference there between, you know, the US and other markets, where the breakfast television is national, which was why these guys are much bigger. And if you turn on the radio, you're tending to turn on your local radio station. So that's where it's sort of a bit different. But yeah, generally, I think on the whole, Americans tend to watch a lot more telly in the morning.
There's a strange thing. There was a sort of movement in, I guess it was the late 1990s here in the UK. The show was The Big Breakfast, and that seemed to change the mould of, I mean, I guess it maybe it sort of came out of the slightly anarchic side of TVAM, which was very cozy sofa.
How about that? Yes,
we've got our man about the house, Richard Randall's here.
Yeah. Richie Randall. Mel's going to be upstairs with Richie in a second. Fine line between interior design and vandalism sometimes. Plus, prepare to lose your socks by watching our hilarious competition, Gagging for It Sounds.
That kind of came along and it sort of broke all the moulds and all the rest of it. And that seemed to be aimed sort of at an ironic student-y audience,
yeah,
and kids. And I guess a sort of a new breed of sort of TV viewers that wanted something a little bit that was more like a radio show in the morning.
Well, Channel 4 had tried to go into the traditional breakfast television market, and they had a couple of failed attempts. And they thought, you know what, this isn't what we're good at. So they wanted these sort of quirky hosts, as you say there. I mean, you think of the people who did it, who hosted it, whether it was Chris Evans, Paula Yates, or Gabby Roslin.
It was a sort of finishing school to go on to pretty brilliant things.
Yeah, I mean, most of these people are still on television now. And funnily enough, the people who made The Big Breakfast, all of the producers who came out of Planet 24, which was Bob Geldof's company that made the show. I mean, if you look at who's making television in the UK at the moment, they all started on The Big Breakfast or The Word. And these shows, they sort of just chucked off formats. And as you say, it was a bit zany, it was a bit wacky, but they did really well. It used to get sort of over 2 million viewers a day. But it was all these sort of quirky little formats.
In terms of other offerings, I'm thinking of shows like Good Morning Joe in the US. Mm-hmm. It's very chatty. They sit around a sort of big sort of oval desk, yeah. But it's a bit more businessy in its in its angle.
Time now to take a look at the morning papers. The Detroit Free Press, a new expert appraisal estimates the Detroit Institute of Arts collection could be worth more than $4.5 billion. The collection includes.
Do you think in the mornings there are niches to be sort of snuggled into in terms of advertising audiences, in terms of Bloomberg doing shows, maybe Reuters TV doing shows, these sorts of niche things that where you can make business news a little bit more sexy and interesting?
Yeah, I mean, niche is the way to go from all television, not just breakfast television. But yeah, you're right. You know, those big shows that we're talking about, whether it's Good Morning America or Good Morning Britain, those are really targeting at the females in the household that tend to stay at home with kids. That's what, if you noticed, all the adverts on those shows are selling you washing detergent or, you know, shopping or that type of product. Whereas slightly earlier in the day, you've got the businessman, you are trying to get that news angle, that sort of, as you say there, some of those brands that are trying to move into this. But yeah, this will, you know, I'm sure in a few years we'll cut that down to even further niches. You'll have the sort of young male demo for that, you'll have the young female demo for that, because everyone's going to be, you know, everyone's got 525 channels on their satellite TV box. So yeah, I think that will change.
That was Broadcast Magazine's Peter White. What doesn't Peter White know? Who knows? Still on the breakfast menu for part two, we meet the voice of Canadian morning, CBC's Matt Galloway, who tells us what it's like to entertain in unsociable hours. We learn about a carefully curated Viennese radio show that sounds like it's on random. And there's more from that Midori House session from the wonderful Penguin Cafe. That's all here on Culture with me, Robert Bounds, on Monocle 24. So let's press pause on this week's theme and hear from the guys behind our Midori House session band, Penguin Cafe. After playing an energetic session to an adoring Monocle crowd, Arthur and Cass from the band join me in the studio to shoot the breeze.
One of the lovely things that my dad, when he created this musical world, it was not having a singer. And so there's no lyrics, there's no kind of direction, like, on how you should be feeling. And so I think the audience kind of project their own, often whatever they happen to be feeling. And
each piece becomes more like a kind of painting of a soundtrack, which is one of the things that always appealed to me about what Arthur's doing and what his father did as well. I mean, it doesn't have to have a singular emotion. And, you know, largely when you have, you know, a band that's focused on the personality of the singers, you have to kind of suspend disbelief or basically live vicariously through them. But with the Penguins, you know, they've gone through so many different genres that each song becomes a character of its own, which is, that becomes the personality rather than the people in the band.
talking about projecting meanings onto these tracks, I know that on your website, for example, there is a section called mythology. That seemed to be something very important to your dad, the way he explained where the idea from the band came from, the name, the album covers, those sort of surrealist early album covers as well. Yeah. The idea of mythology is pretty important. You obviously, now it's on your shoulders, on both of your shoulders, on the rest of the band's shoulders to sort of bring that mythology forward. Is that kind of in your nature?
I think so.
Embrace that ethereal element to it.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think what was really nice about the idea and where the dream story came from, my dad had a sort of waking dream during a horrible bout of food poisoning in the early 70s. But yes, he had a sort of dystopian vision of the near future where everything was very grey and concrete and disconnected. But you could reject that and look further afield and you'd find the Penguin Cafe, which was a sort of wonderful, exuberant, chaotic place where the human heart could be free. And there's always a band in the back playing. And this was the Penguin Cafe and this was the Penguin Cafe Orchestra in the back. So even from the very, very beginning, it was always, it was like a virtual band which was being played by its kind of analogue in the real world. And I just love that because it makes the whole point, the music, and it's not about the people, it's not about who wrote it. It sort of becomes a kind of Quicksilver thing in its own right.
And so Quicksilver thing, that's a nice way of putting it.
Yeah, there's so many of us on stage at the moment. I mean, and the parts are quite simple, so we become part of the audience as well.
Do you feel that you have to live up to the old records?
Yeah, well, I think there's obviously a huge sense of responsibility. Like we don't want to dilute or sort of muddy the water for what my dad did and what all the musicians he worked with. And so this kind of the whole first sort of incarnation of Penguin Cafe Orchestra was something that at the same time as really enjoying playing it and hearing it live again and that feeling very natural. I mean, the main challenge was this is a very delicate, beautiful thing that we're kind of picking up and walking forward with.
But one of the beauties of it, especially with the last two albums that have been made, they contain the same spirit and the same area. They feel like natural extensions, and it's been really, really nice to see how many of the original fans and supporters of the band have taken to those songs as naturally as they took to the original ones.
Yeah.
There doesn't seem to be very many occurrences ever in the history of music where the son of an original composer has managed to kind of take on that without there being sides taken or opinions concretely kind of rejecting it. And I think one of the natures of that is A, how seamlessly it's been and naturally and organically it's been done, but also the fact that it isn't through the personality of the lead people. Icon of it. So the music just works.
That was Arthur and Cass from Penguin Cafe speaking to me after their Midori House session. They're playing dates across the UK this summer, including the Brecon Jazz Festival. For more information, head to penguincafe.com. This is Culture on Monocle 24, and now we're getting back on track with this week's Breakfast Show theme. Earlier we heard from Peter White about television formats, now we're heading to the US to see it put into action. American Breakfast Show CBS This Morning recently posted its highest second quarter viewership in 20 years. With the motto, News is Back, executive producer and vice president of news programming Chris Licht took the helm in 2011, slowly shifting programming and everything in between from the set to the staff. Chris Licht sat down with our Megan Billings in the CBS studio to chat about the quest for the right formula and how to keep an early morning staff in good spirits.
Right, here we go.
I'm hearing her.
Welcome to CBS This Morning.
Okay, Anita's not hearing us. I'm going to cue you, Rodney, okay?
Our goal was to be competitive and relevant, and that was the formula. It was that you watched viewers who watch CBS This Morning feel that they are on the cutting edge of what's happening that day and what is going to happen in the future. And as long as we are giving people that kind of experience where they feel like they're part of the conversation as to what's happening in the world, then that's a formula for success, I think. And ultimately, you can produce any kind of broadcast and you can build a beautiful set like we have and have great graphics, but it's the connection with the hosts. On paper, you may not think that the three of these guys would work. And the morning landscape is littered with people who thought that this combination or that combination would work. And we've gotten very lucky in that we have three hosts who genuinely like each other, who genuinely connect with the audience. And I think if there's a formula to what I would say is relative success, it is competitive, relevant programming and hosts that really connect with each other and the audience.
In terms of the staff, so the hosts and kind of the staff downstairs, you have really early mornings. How do you keep people happy? And how do you keep them liking each other when they're waking up so very early in the morning?
It's a great question, because one of the things we did when we launched this broadcast was not only change the look and the editorial content, but we really completely sort of started from scratch on how the show is produced. So, you know, the analogy I like to use is we didn't only just change the product, we changed the factory. And part of that was really holding out to get the best of the best and people that would fit into the culture that we were creating. So I think that's the key to happiness. Now, I don't know if you ask the dozens and dozens and dozens of they all love getting up in the morning, but I will say they love working on the show. It's almost like a campaign feel where we're trying to change the morning. We're all rowing the same direction and we're all equal. So yeah, it's a very nice vibe. That's what ultimately gets people out of bed, is they believe in what we're doing and everyone is rowing in the same direction.
And we got 50 seconds, 25 seconds back.
If we don't get back to AFB, right?
Yeah. All right. Picture was the same. Ronnie, I'm going to cue you as well. Just cue Vanita as normal. Okay, back to normal. Back to normal. Right, 30 seconds back.
I want to shift gears for a second and just talk about logistics. Because this is 2 hours of live programming. I was in your control room a moment ago. It was an overload of stimulation for me. You know, how do you manage 2 hours of live television? And when things go wrong, what's your key to success?
It is overload. It's a very well-oiled machine, though. And we actually not only do 2 hours, we also update for the West Coast every day. So we have to be constantly watching stories and changing the rundown all the way through noon. So all those people you saw in the control room, downstairs, all with this specific job that helps sort of manage the chaos. Now, specifically in the control room, I have a secret. And that secret is I try to hire as many local news people as possible. Because, you know, for example, the guy who sits to my left, John Peck, he was an executive producer for the morning show in Seattle. And he was one of two people in the control room, because it was all automated. And so that guy can get anything done on the air by himself. And then you put him in a control room where he has at his disposal all of these other people and equipment and toys and gadgets, and he can really do anything. And he's one of the best in the business. So I have found, and there are several people in that control room that came from local news and on our staff, I find that since I came from local news, I know firsthand that is the secret to adjusting when things go wrong and getting breaking news in and all of the things that make you the broadcast that you are, a live, competitive, breaking environment.
A lot of people don't think about how large the U.S. is, and that when you're doing a morning show, you actually have to prepare for what's happening in 3 hours. So how do you make that relevant?
You always look at every story as to how will it impact the people who are watching in that specific time zone. And as much as you can adjust the three different feeds, you sort of adjust the lead into it or the tag or something so that if you're watching in that time zone, you say, oh, that's relevant to me. And then you also have the best host in the world.
Gail King from CBS This Morning. I don't know who you are, but may I just say, Chris Licht is the best boss we've ever had here on CBS This Morning. Wow. He put this whole team together, so you can thank him.
We were just talking about you can produce anything in the world, but unless the hosts connect with the audience and each other, it means nothing.
Oh. So how do you feel about your co-hosts?
Oh, well, this is the thing. You can never script chemistry. And so this is the first time the three of us have worked together, but it's certainly not our first rodeo. And so when you put three different personalities together, you just sort of, you know, Chris will tell you, you throw it at the wall and hope it works. But the beauty of him is that he saw something in each of us, and then he saw bigger than that and saw that the three of us could work together. So I think, you know, when it comes to chemistry, either you have it or you don't, and I know that we have that. You can't script it. You can't fake it. You know yourself. Megan, when you're watching a show, you can tell if they're really gelling or is it just that fake, ha, 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 ha. You can tell that. You can tell that.
You have to be ready to throw the show out the window or go longer with an interview or go shorter with an interview or add something at the last minute or change something at the last minute. And it's, you're never, people say, well, when is the show finally set and ready to go? It never, you know, 9 a.m. is, you know, when it's all done because you, yeah, you're constantly trying to make it as competitive and as relevant as possible.
That was Chris Licht, executive producer of CBS This Morning, speaking to Monocle's Megan Billings. So we've heard about radio, we've been on a television set, we know what the people of Socotra wake up to even. But what about the presenters themselves? For the past 5 years, Torontonians have woken up to the mellow Matt Galloway, the host of Canada's number one breakfast radio show. Each morning, Galloway takes his listeners through the latest news and the issues city residents are talking about. His balance between hard news and cultural stories have kept his listening figures high. In fact, they've never been higher. Monocle's Jason Lee caught up with Matt to find out how he does it.
I wake up at 22 minutes after 3, which is very precise, but it has to be. I have a little bit of breakfast at home. I get on my bicycle and I ride to work every day, rain or shine, winter, summer. I get here and reread all of the scripts that I was sent last night, looking at them, picking through things, rewriting things. I read about 9 or 10 different newspapers. I go through Twitter, I check Facebook, try and figure out what's happened while people were sleeping, try and figure out what it is that we can do that will take the story that was a story the day before and kind of move it a bit more into the present. And then away we go. We're on the air at about 5:35.
How is it different preparing a morning show versus any other news show?
I mean, one of the great things about doing a morning show and one of the reasons why morning shows are still, as radio changes, still so vital is it's the first thing that people hear in the morning. So I'm the first voice that people hear when they wake up. And I can tell people, while you were sleeping, this is what happened. This is what you need to know about what's going to happen today. This is what you need to know about how what's gone on is going to affect the city or shape the city. And being first is a huge thing. I mean, being first in a selfish way means that you can kind of set an agenda, but it also is a huge responsibility. If somebody's lying in bed and the first thing that they hear at 5:45 is your voice, you can set them off on the right path or the wrong path. And you have to think really carefully about tone, about story selection, about how to set something up so that they're not depressed and miserable when they get out of bed, but hopefully feeling informed and ideally feeling a little bit optimistic about what the city holds and why they want to spring out of bed and get out the door and kind of embrace that city.
And what's the strategy when it comes to balancing, I guess, harder news versus cultural Toronto stories?
We try and make a show that sounds like the city. And so that is good news, that's bad news, that's cultural elements, that's music, it's sport. It has to be what it is that people are talking about. And so if you aren't checking all those boxes, then you're not really doing what you should be doing on the radio. For us, it works best if there's that range. And sometimes the news is very heavy and it's depressing. We did a program just the other day that had a story about a website that's been created in Toronto that sort of places the Syrian conflict here in Canada, if we were Syrian, and it allows people to think about what's happening in Syria in a way that would relate to their own lives and the fact that this entire city would be hollowed out. That could be a really depressing thing to wake up to in the morning. But it actually allows people to think differently about the news that they've been hearing and maybe put themselves in that news. And you present it in a way that allows them to take control of that news in a way. And so it's really about tone and it's about balance. But as I say, it's also about just understanding that if that's the story, if the story is about the fact that 15 people were shot at a party in the East End of Toronto, well, you don't ignore that story because it's heavy. You do it in a way because it reflects the city that you're in that morning.
How do you make sure that you sound the way you want to sound in the morning when you're not feeling your best?
You have to. I mean, that's my job. I have 3 hours on the radio and it's amazing, an immense privilege. It moves very quickly. And nobody wants to hear me moaning about the fact that I'm tired. I mean, if I was tired, then I should get another job. That's kind of what I do. So I go to bed when it's still light out. I wake up when it's dark. And for those 3 hours, I mean, I can be miserable later on in the day. But for those 3 hours, it's not about me. It's about the city and about trying to be a vehicle for the city and be a megaphone for the city. And so my emotions, my opinions, all those things like that, I have to kind of park for the most part.
Do you see yourself doing this in the foreseeable future?
I have the best job in radio. I mean, there are great jobs in radio, but I like to believe I have the best job in this country in radio. We have an incredible city, an enormous audience. We are the top-rated morning show in this entire country. We're not giving things away. We're not sending people on trips. We are having pretty involved intellectual conversations and emotional conversations about what life is like in a big, complicated, constantly changing city. And that people want to listen to that, that they don't just want to listen to somebody who's going to send them to Mexico or want to listen to pop music, but they actually want to engage and kind of lean forward and plug themselves into the city. That to me is an incredible thing. I can't imagine doing something like this anywhere else.
That was CBC's Matt Galloway speaking to Monocle's Jason Lee. After the break, we round things up with an unconventional music show in Vienna.
The Globalist provides insight and analysis of the key news and business stories in Europe and the Middle East. Informed, engaging and authoritative, it's a 60-minute bulletin of news, features and opinion. Two presenters in London are joined by guests in our studio and all around the world, including Monocle's editors and friends in our Hong Kong and Tokyo bureau. The Globalist also features an extended daily newspaper review with a special guest here in Midori House. And of course, we round up the business headlines with an expert analyst in a key city. All that and more every weekday at 6 a.m. London time on The Globalist.
You are tuned in to Culture with me, Robert Bounds, on Monocle 24. Now for our final stop, we're in Vienna, where an early morning music show called Pasticcio has been on the airwaves since the 1980s. On the programme, the presenters build shows based around a theme, quote or story, something that continues to surprise and draw listeners to this day. Monocle's Alexei Korolev is at the iconic Funkhaus in Vienna, the Alpine Nation's radio and TV headquarters, to talk to two stalwart Pasticcio hosts about how they do it.
Pasticcio mit Renate Burcher.
It's a very free form. It's a sort of a colourful meadow where you can choose anything you want.
Renate Burcher launched Pasticcio on Austria's Ö1 radio station in January of 1980 and has been co-presenting it ever since.
It's a 40 minutes program or a 45 minutes program. And of course, you have to take care about people who go to the bathroom, who have their breakfast. And so you would not start by Schoenberg or a big opera. Why it works? Because it takes listeners on both hands and says, hello, let's have a nice morning. And the nicest compliment I get is when people say, oh, you made my day.
Matthias Werner von der Gruppe Federspiel über sein Stück Morsen. Herzlich willkommen.
I mean, when it started, there were no programs like this. Now it changed a lot. But at this moment, when I came in, there were only the concerts, and I was so fed up with that, and I was so grateful to get a chance to communicate about music via radio.
Pasticcio was truly a break from the past. Not only was it the first music program in Austria to feature live commentary, it has also introduced a creative new approach to breakfast radio, as another Pasticcio presenter, Elke Czajkner, explains.
It's much fun to work for Pasticcio, I think, because you are so free. You can, just let your thoughts float and from one piece to the other, to the other, to the next, and surprise yourself and surprise the audience. Well, for me, the most difficult thing is to find the first piece. You have your next broadcast, and then you think, how do I start? You know, there are so many possibilities, and you can come to this start in different ways. Maybe sometimes just, you know, close your eyes and go to the CD shelf and just grab one and then find the first piece. Maybe I start with Bach, and then I think, okay, what could be the next association? Or maybe I go for a walk, and then I have an idea, and then the next piece is maybe, I don't know, Ella Fitzgerald. And there will be a connection between them.
It don't mean a thing if it ain't got that swing. The most important word is surprise. You have to surprise. All you gotta do is
sing. A little know-how from Renata Bulcha as well.
So this could be a little story that I put in, and I try to not talk more than 1 minute, or I quote, if I quote Bach or something like that. Der Vater meines nächsten Interpreten, ein Brauereibesitzer in Omaha, Nebraska, stammte ursprünglich aus Wien und hieß Fritz Austerlitz. Die Mama, Johanna, den Sohn nannten sie Frederick. Different types who wear a day
coat, pants with stripes and cutaway coat. So Pasticcio is not the only eclectic show anymore. There are shows that are even more eclectic, you know, and we have special places for pop music, for jazz music, for world music, there's everything. But still, Pasticcio somehow seems to work, even if it's old, you know, yeah, it seems to work. I don't know why.
For Monocle in Vienna, I'm Alexei Korolev.
Thanks, Alexei, and that brings us to the end of this week's show. Next time, we'll meet the people behind the elusive secret cinema as they prepare for an extravagant Back to the Future setup. You've been listening to Culture with me, Robert Bound. My producer was Holly Fisher, and I asked her how she liked her eggs in the morning. And she said, oh, with a kiss. Time for one final song from the Penguin Cafe to really get your day going. Here they are performing Black Hibiscus. Thanks, as ever, for tuning in.